This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
There's a bit of debate over how badly damaged Ukraine's economy is as Russia's war there rages. Live from London, this is the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service. I'm Victoria Craig. Good morning. 4.8 million jobs are thought to have left Ukraine since the start of Russia's invasion back in February. That's according to figures this week from the UN's International Labor Organization, which expanded on the knock-on effects that's had on lost wages, spending power, and economic benefits of a fully employed workforce. While there's no argument that the economic impact of war is sizable, Ukraine's former economy minister, Timothy Milovanov, says the ILO's estimates likely overstate what's happened there.
There's a description that they took the Gaza data from Israeli Gaza military escalation, and there they have an estimate of what's the percentage of labor force which went out of, you know, how many jobs were lost, and they applied that structural changes to Ukraine. And the Gaza response to the war is very different from what Ukrainian response is. So it's nothing but just a number.
And in what way, can you just explain the way that the response is different and why you think these numbers don't match up to what's actually happening on the ground?
So I don't want to be misinterpreted. I'm saying, you know, I'm not saying there is no job loss and it's massive, right? But just numbers are very different. And the response of the Ukrainian state or government is very different. You know, the banking system didn't collapse. The inflation is at 10-16%. So Ukraine maintained macroeconomic stability. Just that alone is at odds with your typical conflict in Afghanistan, Syria, Gaza, you name it. Usually there, macroeconomic stability is gone. There are banks runs, payment systems are not working. And so people lose jobs. The real sector collapsed. Here we see that the financial sector didn't collapse. And so, of course, the real sector has experienced a shock. And we've run our own surveys at the Kyiv School of Economics, at the business school. And we are seeing that about 25%, 20 to 25% of the businesses have temporarily shut down. So in that sense, the estimate should be probably at the order of 3.5 million people, not five.
There are concerns, though, that many people who fled the conflict might not return quickly to the country or even at all in some cases. Is the government doing now, or should it be thinking about responding to that kind of brain drain that the country would experience in that case?
What the survey showed that 76% of people would like to come back at the first opportunity. Now, then, on the other hand, there were about 10-15% of people who were unsure what to do. From people who left the country. And now they become settled in, and that number has gone up quite a bit, and they would like to stay permanently. So what I think and what our analysts think is that if the war goes on for another 2, 3, 4 months, those numbers, 76% coming back, will start falling dramatically because there will be a new academic year, kids will go to schools, and families will start settling in. The government is trying to do reconstruction, is actually successful at reconstruction. They already recovered, let's say, 30 bridges in Kyiv region. They are building schools, hospitals, shelter, and they're bringing businesses back. And so that creates those opportunities for people to come back to something.
Timothy Milovanov, the president of the Kyiv School of Economics, thanks so much for sharing your perspective with us.
Thank you.
Checking the numbers now, and what a difference one day makes. Global stocks have come off their 18-month lows in today's session. The Pan-European Stock 600 Index is up 1.25%, while stocks across Asia ended up well over 2% today. Cryptocurrencies have also steadied after hundreds of billions of dollars were wiped off in a single day this week. Despite today's moves, though, inflation worries are still weighing on investors. Fed Chair Jerome Powell told my Marketplace colleague Kai Rizdal it's, quote, just way too high in the U.S. can find a link to that interview over at marketplace.org. Meanwhile, economic turmoil is being acutely felt in Sri Lanka, which has experienced its worst ever crisis. Days after the prime minister resigned after widespread and sometimes violent protests, a new one has now been installed and is today holding talks with political parties to form a new cabinet. The BBC's Anbarasan Etirajan has more from Colombo.
As a five-time prime minister, Ranil Wickremesinghe brings experience, but he faces an uphill battle. Soon after he took over, he said his priority was to return Sri Lanka to a position where people would once again have three meals a day. With depleted foreign exchange reserves, Sri Lanka is unable to import food and fuel, leading to soaring prices. For more than a month, people have been protesting. The anti-government demonstrators say they will continue to call on President Gotabaya Rajapaksa to quit.
That's the BBC's Anbarasan Etirajan there. To Kenya now, where importers say commercial banks are limiting how much foreign currency they can withdraw at once. That's despite the central bank's assurances it has reserves to cover 5 months of imports. The BBC's Charles Gitanga reports now from one of the busiest commercial hubs in Nairobi.
Eastleigh, arguably Nairobi's largest commercial district. A lot of money changes hands here every day. The business community here pegs it at a third of the capital's revenue. But an apparent dollar rationing directive by the Kenya's central bank is threatening to slow down activities. Abdirahman Ibrahim imports and sells spices. Now he has to endure massive delays as his bank can no longer provide the amounts of dollars he needs.
When you go to the bank, you are told to come back tomorrow because they do not have enough dollars.
Foreign currency exchange shops, too, have not been spared. It's a worse shortage they have seen in decades.
When you go to withdraw dollars, you are either told to wait or to book, which takes approximately 24 hours before you get the dollars.
More than half of Kenya's debt is external, and the biggest chunk is dollar-denominated. And in the run-up to the August elections, authorities are keen to prevent negative movements in the exchange rate, as that would add to the debt burden. Nairobi-based economist Reginald Kazutu says Kenya's over-reliance on debt forms the genesis of this problem.
We have more demand for dollars versus the supply of dollars that we get in the country. So your balance of payments funded by debt. So without that supply of debt and fixing the shilling, you end up in the situation that you have right now.
At a time when East Africa's leading economy is struggling, the pressure to repay its dollar-denominated loans, as well as keeping an eye on rising cost of living, are yet other challenges that Kenyans hope their governments could provide answers to sooner than later.
That's the BBC's Charles Gitanga reporting from Nairobi there and in London. I'm Victoria Craig with the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.